values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
All right, as we roll into the final hour of the show, harsh deportation tools are just fine with many Americans. But I want to go back to a story from here in Arizona. A rancher in the Nogales area had been accused of murder and was put on trial. And I think it was an eight-person jury. Seven of the eight were not guilty votes, but there was one holdout. So it ended up in a hung jury because it wasn't a unanimous decision. But the vast majority of jurors were going to vote not guilty, which is why they're not going to retry. So I want you to hear this, just kick off this border conversation. This is ABC.
The trial last week ended with a deadlocked jury. Prosecutors said George Kelly in Nogales, Arizona, recklessly fired nine shots from an AK-47 rifle toward a group of men on his cattle ranch last year. Kelly said he fired warning shots in the air and didn't shoot directly at anyone. Gabriel Kuen Batime was killed. Prosecutors say they won't retry, citing unique circumstances and challenges. Kelly says it's been a nightmare. He's relieved and says that the victim's family has his sincere sympathy.
If you listen to the show, I'm not a hard-hearted person. I'm certainly not a believer in shooting somebody that's unarmed. But when you look at the circumstances of what happened here, these were warning shots that were fired. There was no bullet recovered that was connected to his gun. There was no evidence to, and the juror saw it this way. There was no evidence to point to him being a killer on any level. The suspicion was because general direction, people on his land, but he also was talking about rip crews. The American people, and this has been such a good eye-opening experience in the last couple of years, the American people are able to see what we in Arizona have known for a long time. I ranted about this before, about vindication for Arizona. We have been accused of being racist and xenophobic, and we are not. The culture of other countries has dramatically influenced Arizona, whether it's the Mexican culture, Central American culture, it doesn't matter. We are a culturally diverse place. We accept people from all over the world. We embrace their cultures. We ask them to embrace ours. We get along well. There are not race wars in our streets. That stuff is not happening. We deal with crime. We deal with a lot of different things just like any other place does. It's not perfect, but we are not the way we have been portrayed in the media around the country. I have friends in Florida, and thankfully Florida also has a lot of immigrants in that state, so they understand intellectually that what is really going on and how it's being portrayed many times is not necessarily the case. But I've had friends ask me about Arizona. It's a safe, wonderful, amazing place filled with really good-hearted people that take people as they see them, that take people at face value, and they are accepting. So what we have watched happen now, more and more people, large numbers of Democrats now, are in favor of mass deportations. The attitudes and policies of the administration, this president's administration, are beginning to backfire because people understand kindness, but you can't allow people to abuse your kindness. And that's what's happening here. I've used the illustration of squatters laws. We understand homelessness. Here, Americans understand the plight of homeless people, and we are not immune from the heartbreak, and we're helpful, and we're kind, and we will do what we can. But that doesn't mean we're going to allow people to break into someone's property, squat there, claim residency, and then make the court spend months and months and months to throw them out while they destroy the property. We don't believe the laws should be that way. So what we've done around the country is changed the squatters laws. Now, they had one here that the governor vetoed for what reason, I cannot imagine. But we were trying to do it here. Legislators in Arizona were trying to do something about it. And it's happening all over the country. Here we've got the federal government not doing anything about the problems with border security. So you have this political argument that comes from it. You know, we're sending, what was it, how many, $47 billion or whatever it is for Ukraine to secure its border, but we didn't spend $4 billion to secure ours. And all of these political arguments, but it's deeper than that. There are great relations. Let's go back to how kind Arizona is. When you go to towns like Douglas, Arizona, Nogales, Arizona, which are border towns, the relationships with the people in the towns and the towns in Mexico right on the other side of the border are generations. kids coming across the border to play sports and to coexist and to grow up together and love each other. Those have happened forever. Those relationships are souring on some levels because of illegal immigration. That people on both sides of the border, if you look at the people in this country in large numbers, if they're these are migrants to this country, legal migrants to this country that are against illegal immigration. It's not just the white Europeans that were born here that want to shut. That's not, that narrative is old and tired. The American people are starting to sour on immigration. I've told many times the stories of immigrants in this country that I'm friends with that go back to my early days in my childhood. My friend from whose parents were from Mexico, and the business his father built. His father had such a great work ethic, still does, although his father's closer to retirement now. But that family took me in and allowed me to work with them. And I was able to work in I worked in the packing houses with produce, and I did work in the fields a little bit in the summers. And we used to go to this place called the Boneyard, which I don't know why they called it that, but we'd go to the Boneyard and we'd buy produce. We'd go buy a truckload of watermelons. My buddy and I would take our money. We'd go buy a truckload of watermelons. We'd buy them for 50 cents a piece, and we'd drive them into town and we'd sell them for $3 a piece and make enough money. And that's when my buddy started his business. But that work ethic came from his dad, who built a business and multiple businesses with the sweat of his brow as a Mexican immigrant to this country. And so many other stories, the Cuban immigrants I knew in Florida and the people here from all over the world. And instead of us celebrating those success stories of legal immigrants, everybody's called a migrant or a newcomer, and it is muddying the waters. And the American people are confusing what we see at the border, the chaos and the lack of control and the lack of respect for American laws. And they're putting that off onto people that have come here the right way, that have done it the right way. And it's shameful. And I'll tell you where it spills over. And this is another place where it's shameful, is it spills over to the Dreamers. These largely are people that were brought here by their parents through no fault of their own, because their parents knew that if their children were going to have a chance at a really good life, it was going to be being educated in American schools and then living the American dream. And now many of them are adults in their 30s, and they are living that dream, but they don't live the full dream. They don't live the full American dream, because we can't figure out what to do with the issue of the fact that they weren't born here. Two presidents ago, they were given protection under an executive order. But these are people that are contributing members of our society. They live like Americans because, for all intents and purposes, they are Americans. And our laws haven't been fixed or changed to protect them. We're not going to send them out of the country. But the other problem is a lot of the animosity toward the Dreamers, which is unfounded, it's not their fault, is because we're creating that next generation. It's incredible to have 500,000 plus unaccompanied minors come into this country in the last couple of years. Realizing that in 15 years, your children, your grandchildren are going to be voters or legislators themselves at some level, and they're going to be dealing with the next generation of this problem. That's what is so frustrating. Americans are souring on immigration, and I think it's at the detriment to our country. Coming up in a moment, we get you caught up on the biggest news stories of the day. It's a segment we call Did You Hear This? So stick around for it.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, let's find out what Julia has come up with today. Did you hear this?
Did you hear this? Broomhead's reaction to the hottest news stories.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken is urging Hamas to quickly accept a new ceasefire deal. National Security spokesperson John Kirby said the proposal was negotiated in good faith by the Israelis.
A deal which certainly would get these hostages home, but would also result in 6 weeks of no fighting anywhere. And the Israelis were a big part of that.
Will Hamas accept the deal?
They haven't yet. We haven't seen any advancement toward peace from them. I hope they do, if for nothing else, for self-preservation. I would love to see the fighting stop, and more than anything else, I would love to see the Israelis, and some of these, a couple of these hostages are Americans as well. I would love to see them be able to get their loved ones back and begin to rebuild their lives. So yes, I would like to see them do it. I'm not holding out high hopes, but they haven't said yes yet, but they might hear, because they know what's coming if they don't. Let's hope that the combination of more acquiescing from the Israelis and the potential for disaster that could happen with the fighting is a yes, and let's move on with a ceasefire and a pathway toward peace.
A North Carolina community is mourning the shooting death of four uniformed officers. ABC's Rihanna Alley reports the murder of the four officers is part of a worrisome development.
According to the Fraternal Order of Police, this year is on pace to set a record for police officers shot. At least 10 officers have been killed by gunfire in the U.S. just this month, including two officers near Syracuse, New York, and Chicago police officer Luis Huesca, shot while coming home from work. He was laid to rest yesterday.
Is there a way to protect officers on duty?
Yeah, there are a couple of things that need to happen, and that is we're going to have to start looking at how long people are sentenced for violent offenses and then making sure that they abide by their release. They can't have firearms. If they're found with firearms, the penalties need to be severe. The message needs to be sent that if you are a convicted felon, especially somebody that is violent, that firearms are not in your future. If we are allowing bad people near guns, we are allowing the revolving door of the justice system. It adds to the danger for law enforcement, because many people then finally say that they're going out in a blaze of glory and they're going to try to take as many people with them as they can. We need to separate dangerous people, do what we can to rehabilitate them, but separate dangerous people from society and not put law enforcement in this position. You are listening to Did You Hear This? Every day at 11:20, we do it to catch you up on the major stories.
As protests continue on college campuses around the country over the war between Israel and Hamas, there are questions about the balancing the First Amendment rights of the protesters with the decisions by the schools to limit those protests.
The First Amendment is not absolute, right? Think about libel laws, right? Someone can say something about someone else, and they can get sued over it, and they can't say, well, it's my First Amendment right to say it. There are restrictions that are allowed within the First Amendment. To have a parade in a city, you still have to get a permit. You can't just say we're allowed to do it.
Did schools wait too long to handle the protests due to the First Amendment?
Yeah, they did. They've waited far too long, and they've allowed people to behave badly under the auspices of saying we think that they are trying to make a point, so let's negotiate. These are not people trying to make a point. These are people that are self-serving. They've proven themselves to do great deals of damage. You look at Columbia, when they finally moved and said, we're going to start holding you accountable and punishing you for your bad behavior. What did they do? They used hammers. They broke into a building. They barricaded the doors. This is bad behavior. There are people out there that are legitimate protesters. They want their voices heard and they want their numbers seen. We know who those people are. Those are the people that do it in a way that accentuates their message, and it isn't this personal goal of trying to be seen. What you're seeing here is an abuse of this, and they needed to be punished much faster. Take into consideration what ASU did. ASU handled it appropriately. ASU did a very good job with ASU PD and with leadership. I just think that's the model. You nip it in the bud, and you, as ASU said, most of the people arrested, the vast majority of the people arrested, were not students at ASU. These were infiltrators trying to abuse the system, and they're being held accountable.
Jerry Seinfeld told the New Yorker Radio Hour he misses the days of Cheers, MASH, and Mary Tyler Moore, when sitcoms used to be funny. Seinfeld says he knows exactly what happened to comedy.
This is the result of the extreme left and PC crap and people worrying so much about offending other people. Mm-hmm. When you write a script and it goes into four or five different hands, here's our thought about this joke, well, that's the end of your comedy.
Is there funny comedy anymore?
Not as much. Not nearly as much. I think he's right. And I like the fact that he said extreme left, because it isn't about being a Democrat. It is not about being left. It is the extremes on both sides that are generally responsible for a lot of the problems. And he's right here. The idea that you're going to write a sitcom, and the reason why Seinfeld's show was brilliant is because Jerry Seinfeld is brilliant. Him and the people that co-wrote that show were just funny, are just funny. You go back and look at the shows from my generation that were hysterically funny, could never be produced today unless they were animated. For whatever reason, you can still say horribly offensive things and make people laugh with it as long as you do it as an animation. But Law and the Family was a very popular show when I was a kid. It was the funniest show on TV. And it was about a guy that was a racist, misogynist, lovable guy, if you can imagine that being possible. You could never produce that show again today. And yes, we've lost our sense of humor in this politically correct world, except the funniest people on the planet refuse to give into it. And that's why they remain successful. Great job, Julia. Very good job.
I figured you'd like that comedy one.
Yeah, I do. If you think about who are considered to be the funniest people right now in show business, you've got Dave Chappelle, who I think is a genius, but he refuses to give in. He tells jokes that could be offensive to anyone, but when you get to one group of people, you're supposed to be hands off, and he goes after them with both barrels. Ricky Gervais is another one. I think Ricky Gervais is a genius. The guy just goes after everyone. Bill Maher, who's going to be in town here, I guess he's on with Gatos today. Maher is going to be on with Gatos today at 4 o'clock. I'm jealous of that guest because I think Bill Maher is a great comedic mind, and he goes after both sides with the absurdity that he sees. I don't agree with him a lot, but he's a provocative person, and we've lost a lot of that and worried about being offended. And when someone does get offended and they shout that they're offended, the other person is supposed to apologize and be quiet. I hope that goes away sooner rather than later. In a moment, we're going to go back to talking about the economy, the Arizona economy. What is stagflation? We'll discuss it next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
You know, we've been bouncing around with this conversation about the economy for quite a while because there is a dichotomy that's going on. The American economy remains very strong. We are still the strongest economy in the world, but there are danger signs out there. I continue to try to see both sides because I don't want to appear that just because I politically lean right that I can't see both sides. I can, but that's where the discussion has to begin and end. Right is still right. Wrong is still wrong. It's not always right and left, but it is always right and wrong. Whatever the country did, whether it was under Donald Trump or it was under Joe Biden, it doesn't matter. We've made decisions that we were forced into because of COVID. The way it was handled from the beginning and the guesswork that was involved, where you stand on vaccines and how it was a rush to market or whatever you want to call it. I don't know. Whatever it is, we did it. It's over and it's behind us. But we are continuing to spend money at an alarming rate. We borrow money and we print money. That's where inflation comes from. So the Fed steps in and they begin to raise interest rates to slow down the economy. By slowing down the economy and making the availability of money more expensive, slowing down that economy, they knew it was going to cost jobs. But it didn't cost jobs quickly enough. We saw the jobs market remain strong. But a big part of that propping up the jobs market was the government. It is funny, the government didn't say it needed to shrink too. The government continued to grow at an alarming pace. So they were borrowing money and printing money and increasing in size, a recipe for disaster. Now there's a concern for something called stagflation. And what happened in the first quarter of this year is what has many experts very concerned. And I will tell you, the whispers of this and the concerns go back a couple of years, because people were seeing that the American government, whether you believe it was necessary or not, because of COVID, threw trillions of dollars into our economy. And because of the printing and borrowing of money, that's what was causing inflation. but the government continues to grow and people saw it. Stagflation is a combination of sticky high inflation, and 3.5% is still well above the 2% what they want to be managed inflation. So 3.5% year over year. And then on top of that, 1.6% growth in the GDP, which is showing it's skidding almost to a halt. And so with those two things combined, that's what stagflation is. Sticky high inflation, and you have a stagnant growth. 1.6 growth is very low. Those two things are scary. We are seeing jobs being lost. We are now seeing a deep weakening in the private sector of full-time jobs. When you couple that with people looking at how many Americans, and you might be one of them. So all of these stories that you see about, we have this really good economy. Why are the Americans down on the economy? If you look at all the signs, the job numbers remain strong. How many Americans are working more than one job? How many people are still spending thousands more dollars each month to exist in a world that they lived in years ago? You want to keep the same lifestyle. It's costing you thousands of dollars more each month, and many people don't have it. And I will say this also, and the reason why you're starting to see people really panic is for younger people, it is a time that is not good. You have to work much harder. You're not saving for your future. You feel as if you're treading water and you're not getting ahead. Now, I want you to think about it for someone who is my age and probably even 10 years older than me. I'm almost 57. At 67 years old, if there's someone out there in their mid-60s and they're struggling right now, they're looking at the world and saying, I don't have 30 years to make up for this. I don't have 25 years to make up for this downtime whenever it ends. I'm in an immediate place of disaster right now, and I'm not going to have time to make up for it. So this is where we're seeing the bad signs of this. I will tell you, and I keep talking about Arizona's economy. When we went through a terrible economic time in the state of Arizona, and we did just like the rest of the country, it was worse for Arizona than most of the country. We learned lessons from it, and we made adjustments. And the adjustments that Arizona has made in the long term has been a reduction in government. We've reduced the taxes, the percentage that people and businesses pay in taxes, and we've reduced regulation. We have shrunk the government in that way. While the federal government continues to increase in taxes, the president of the United States wants the Trump tax cuts to expire next year, which is not only going to raise taxes on most Americans, but it's going to raise taxes on businesses, the very same businesses that are dealing with higher wages and inflation and buying the materials to produce things. It's not just when you look at the CPI and what it costs for inflation to the consumer. The wholesale inflation numbers have gone up. It costs more to produce them. We had people on from the, we had a very smart woman on from the Farm Bureau, and she talked to us about farmers and dealing with inflation. And they're the only people that pay retail for everything and then sell at wholesale. But they pay retail. They pay retail prices for fuel. They pay retail prices for equipment. They pay retail prices for fertilizer. They pay retail prices for water. And then they sell at wholesale prices to the grocery stores. And when you see inflation, a 78% increase, I think was the number, just in fertilizer costs, it's going to end up costing you money in the long run. And it doesn't matter if it's a farmer or a rancher, and many are both. And when it's in agriculture, they do both. They raise crops and they raise cattle. And they're seeing their expenditures rise in both areas. So you're going to take away tax cuts. What you're going to do is raise taxes. You call it whatever you want. It's going back to where we were before. On top of that, the president of the United States is in favor of a 44.6% capital gains tax. So you have a property that's a rental property. Let's say you have one. You have one property you bought. Maybe it was your primary residence. You lived in it for 5, 6, 10 years. And then you said, okay, I'm going to buy another piece of property. And that house that I lived in for those years, I'm going to use as a rental. And over the next 10 years or so, I'm going to pay it off. And then in my retirement years, I'm going to watch the equity have grown in that house. I'm going to sell that house, and I'm going to take the proceeds from that house, and it's going to go into my retirement account. And that's part of what I'm going to live off in my retirement years. Except between federal and state taxes, you're going to pay half of your profit. You did all of the work. You bought it, you lived in it, you maintained it, you collected rent, you put on a roof, you painted it, you did the floors, you replaced appliances and cabinets, you fixed what was broken. And when you sell it, you're going to give 50% of the profit you made to the federal government. How many people think that's right? I don't. So we're looking at what's happening, and you look at how the two models are. The Arizona economy is faring much better than the government of the federal government with the waste and the redundancy. I think in the end, those are the things we have to look at. We have to look at the way the government is spending money. All right, we've got some headlines we still need to get to in the next few minutes. And of course, we're going to catch up with the Chris and Joe show and find out what's coming on 2 to 4. We'll do that here, coming up here in just a few moments.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, thanks for being here. We have been a big day on the show. Obviously, a lot is happening. The potential for peace in Israel is one of the latest. There is Israel, I should say, in Gaza, as the Israelis have acquiesced to a couple of demands, but we are waiting to find out if Hamas is going to agree to a ceasefire. Would that be a pathway to peace, or would it just be a way to get hostages out and just a slowdown and a stoppage for a short amount of time in the fighting? We're going to find out. Joining us right now from the Chris and Joe show, which happens here on KTAR News from 2 to 4, is Chris Merrill. It's good to see you.
If there's a ceasefire in Gaza, does that mean that the Colombian students go back to school?
I don't even know if they'll know that there's actually a ceasefire. They'll find another reason to stay.
Why do we just crush the Wi-Fi? Make the Wi-Fi go away, right? And put in one of those cell phone blockers. And all of a sudden, they're like, okay, you know what? This is really inconvenient. I don't have my Netflix. I'm out.
Hey, one of the funniest things.
Why is it I'm the only one that knows the obvious solutions here?
Well, what's interesting is I find weird. I think you and I have this in common, that we find some of the most funniest things in horrible situations.
Of course, yeah.
And somebody showed the video today of these idiots busting through the windows of the doors to the building with hammers.
Yeah.
And then the caption said, but they're mostly peaceful hammers.
Right.
And so we have that.
Yeah,
they're locking themselves in. And no, I don't think the protests are going to
happen. You say that they were breaking in. I say that they were just on a tour. They were just touring through the building.
All right.
Yeah, that's all it is.
An unguided tour?
An unguided tour through the building. Most of them were staying within the velvet ropes.
What do you call the barricade then?
It's a velvet rope. That's okay. Fine. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, that's fine.
All right.
Most of them are very peaceful, and they're just they're taking pictures. That's all they're doing.
What is on the docket for your show today? What are the big things?
Okay, so it's going to be a lot of focus on me. That's one of the things we talked about, is that there's way too much Joe in the Chris and Joe show, and I'd like to have more Chris.
Okay.
So today is going to be a really Chris-focused show, which I think is important for the audience.
Well, the last Joe focus that he told me about had to do with dating.
Yeah.
What he's asking me for.
Yeah, why? Why is he asking you?
He shouldn't be
asking
me.
That's a terrible idea.
It is a horrible idea.
I told him that.
I
thought it'd make for entertaining on your show. So I had this dilemma today where this nice-looking guy asked me for money, and I played dumb. And I was, I don't have any money. And then I've been kind of like kicking myself because I think he might have genuinely been in need. Not like, listen, if homeless advocates tell us all the time, don't contribute these things. Make sure people are getting the services they need. Correct. Don't just give money so they can go spend. I don't think that was this situation. I think this guy was genuinely in a really tight pinch. And I was like, I'm on my way to work. Can't help. Bye. And I left. And I've been in this funk.
You feel guilty? Since.
I do. But I came in here and I told Joe and I told producer Pablo, and they both said, no, you did the right thing. And I said, I knew you were going to say that, which is why I didn't want to tell you.
Yeah.
So anyway, we'll talk about how I'm pretty sure I may have ruined somebody's life with that today. And maybe it was my own. And the other is Glendale is so many people are upset because they're going to start enforcing some of their city code. And I'm the grumpy old man in me is very happy about this.
Is
and
this a lot the, of people,
yeah.
the lawn?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cut your grass.
Yeah. Phoenix has a department called Neighborhood Services.
Yeah.
And when I bought my old house in Phoenix, I was desert landscape and it had been unlived in for a while.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the weeds were pretty high in the front. I couldn't find anybody at that time to come get rid of the weeds. Mm. And so they were growing. Some of the weeds were like 4.5 feet tall.
This is when you were still on crutches, right?
I'm not.
So you couldn't do it. Oh, you're not doing
this. This was a big project. I'm talking about the entire front yard.
No.
So I got finally found someone that did it. And 2 days later, I got a letter from Neighborhood Services. So they had crossed in the mail saying, you're going to fix it or we're going to do it on your behalf.
Yeah. Now, how does it work in Phoenix? Do they
pay for it and they hire someone to do it and send you a bill.
So they could have found somebody to do it. That's
they
nice.
They could have, but that I had already
convenient.
Got it.
You should have just let them take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
See, and City of Phoenix.
Yeah, what would they charge? It would be easy.
Yeah, I mean, you don't know. you never even got an estimate from them. You don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
This is why my wife would not have let me get away with it. She'd say, "What is the estimate from the city? What is the estimate from the three other contractors?
They're going to add 300% and a fine is what they're going to do." I think that's interesting that they're going to start enforcing some of those neighborhood codes.
The other guys are pretty upset about it. They said this is garbage. I own the land. I should be able to do what I want. And if that means I do nothing, then I should be able to do nothing with it. Mm-hmm. And so my grumpy old man and my libertarian grumpy old man got really conflicted today.
Yeah.
No. And then I wanted to help somebody else out, which brought in my socialist old man. What's wrong with me?
Chris Merrill, I think the headline is Chris Merrill feels guilty about something. I think that's a step in the right direction for you. Right.
Therapy is working. Yeah,
it's all right, it's the Chris and Joe Show. It happens 2 to 4 right here on KTAR News. Make sure you catch them. We'll be back tomorrow morning. Our show begins about 8:15, but I'm on the air with Sharp just before 8. So jump in with us as early as you can. Thanks for listening today for as much as you could. Come back and join us tomorrow. And until tomorrow, have a great day, everyone. God bless.